Today is Thursday. It's July 6, 2017. It's 11:13 in the morning. This is John Williams, and we are the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast recorded at the studios of WGN Radio. Portions of this are broadcast on my Saturday show at 11:10 on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN.
I'm Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
And I'm Mark Baser. I'm the host of the interview show on WTTW.
Mark, you should, in keeping with Eric Zorn's tradition, whenever we do it, Eric always wants to go last, and then he describes himself as something.
Gotcha. I'm the lousy host of the interview show.
Pick it up from Kristen McQuarrie in 3, 2, 1, woof.
Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
I'm Mark Baser, the non-Zorn-like host of the interview show on WTTW.
We thank you for that.
Sure. I'm going to use that word, too. I'm very un-Zorn-like.
Okay, kids, so this is weird because, as we said, it's 11:14 in the morning on the 6th of July. So this story is so fast evolving today that maybe it'll be a little bit dated. But maybe, Kristen, you can at least, from 30,000 feet, as they say, give us the overview of what's happening with Illinois' budget, and are we at junk bond status, and what's, are we at DEFCON? What's happening here?
We are hours from the House reconvening and deciding whether or not to override the governor's veto of the budget and the tax hike. So within the next few hours, actually it could go late into the day, we'll know, number one, whether or not the tax hike is happening. And the Daily Herald has some interesting numbers today. If you're wondering how it impacts you, they did household income and how much the tax hike will impact you. Or whether, as you say, we hit DEFCON 12 and we do nothing and we are just kind of stirred back into chaos. Moody's did say recently, one of the rating agencies, that even if the budget and the tax hike pass, we are still at risk for junk bond status because we've dug ourselves so far into the hole that even with this measure that could bring some stability, they still might ding us.
Is there anyone who thinks this problem can be solved without a tax hike? I mean, I haven't heard, the governor agrees there needs to be a tax hike, right?
I don't quite understand
mm-hmm. Obviously everyone's opposed to it, no one wants a tax hike, but everyone also agrees that if we want to fix this, this is what needs to be done. Mm-hmm.
There's no fixing it, really. Not in this right. year. This is going to take a decade.
We want to stop the leaking in the boat. Everyone kind of agrees there has to be a tax increase.
So I wouldn't say everyone does agree with that. But
the governor's deal is, though, that he says, I'll give you the tax hike in exchange for these other things.
And that's been the sticking point all along. That's where you and Eric kind of square off sometimes.
Right. Because that's why you saw most Republicans in the General Assembly vote against this. You might have seen some of them get on board if they had passed any number of the governor's agenda items, but they have not. So in their minds, this is just pouring more money into a broken system.
But, you know, you say there's no fixing it, meaning that we're not going to solve this year, but we're not ever going to solve it without a tax hike. Taxes have to go up in Illinois, right?
I personally believe that. I believe that a 3.75% personal income tax is too low for the size of our state. We have the fifth highest population. I don't think going up to 4.95, which is what this plan is unreasonable. But again, even with all those billions of dollars, we are just kind of paying off debt, paying down debt at a rate that won't even keep up because we're just so far in the hole.
So what's a better solution for you?
I mean, I would like to see, if we're going to see a tax hike, I would like to have seen some pretty dramatic pro-business reforms, and the legislature is unwilling to do that.
What is the connection between some of the things that the governor does want, though, like workers' comp changes? Like, what does that have to do with the budget, or is it just that's the way politics is normally done, wheeling and dealing? But at this state of crisis, it seems to me
you
gotta
give
immature.
Up this time. Yeah,
I hear that argument a lot. I would argue the opposite, that we are so much in the hole that we need to go further with some of these reforms that he wants, not fewer. There's no question we are losing businesses, we are losing residents, even Democrats in the city who don't want to see things like workers' comp. And by the way, that's a trial lawyer thing that protects. I'm sorry, not trial lawyers. That's something else. It protects the insurance companies. And there is a lot of agreement You will hear from small business owners throughout the city, whether they're in Chatham or downtown, that workers' comp rates are too high here and they pay too. They can cut their workers' comp costs in half. They just can't close the gap. And I don't know what, in terms of the most recent negotiations, why that is. But I don't think that's unreasonable that our workers' comp rates mirror those of all of our surrounding states. I don't think it's unreasonable that you give businesses a lower cost to start a business, you know, lower the LLC fees, some of these other things that have been on Governor Rauner's agenda. I do think they are part of the overall economic health of the state, and so they should be tied to the budget.
Really?
In my opinion.
You're for going past the deadline. You're for year three without a budget.
No, absolutely not. No.
That's what's happening.
No, I mean, I just said that I think a tax hike is a reasonable ask at this point, but I also just know the math. It's too late. We can all write higher checks, but unless they do pension reform, unless they maybe take out a loan to pay down the backlog of bills, unless they do other things with this budget package, it's really not going to make much of a difference.
Makes you wonder if you were somebody who provided a service that the state would contract for, if you really want to even bid on that job anymore. You know, I mean, I guess you do because you want work, but you want work so you're going to get paid, and you're not going to get paid for 6 months. You have to float the state 18 months, maybe. It depends on the service and so forth. But you really wonder why are some of the people even providing services to the state? You know what I mean? I mean,
listen, we've been a deadbeat in paying our bills since, 2005 or 2006 is when we started getting that backlog started climbing.
Yeah.
We do things in this state that other people would probably be prosecuted for.
Well, sure. Yeah, I have some experience with this, and they're not very tolerant.
What's the real reason that some members of the Republican House have said we're okay with this budget deal? Is it because of politics for them, or do they actually think that we just need to do it, or are they afraid that they won't be reelected in their areas?
Oh, I think they risked their reelection by voting for it, but I also have a lot of empathy for some of them, especially who are downstate. Their communities have already been decimated for 10, 12, 15 years. Many of them come from university towns, and they're watching students not go to Southern Illinois University anymore, not go to Eastern Illinois University, mass layoffs. The universities have been starved probably the most out of this whole budget crisis. And so I understand their need to stop the bleeding, as you're saying. Even if they're not going to get more money for the universities and their universities are still going to have to dig out, we at least bring some stability to what is their economic engine for their whole community. So I don't begrudge some of the Republicans for stepping in and voting for the tax
hike. I have a good friend who just quit her job at a state university here. She's a law professor, to move to a new job in Jersey. Like, that's how bad it is. He's like, yeah. Jersey's fine. I'll do a good school in Jersey.
Sorry about that, Jersey.
Well, they're just as corrupt. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's not a dig on the state. I love the water.
Illinois keeps its beaches open, right?
Yeah,
there
right. By the way, did you see Chris Christie's famously now lounging on the beach during the 4th of July holiday? They didn't have enough money. A stretch of beach was closed. There he is with his family. So everybody's been making memes and GIFs out of it. And did you see the one that, quote-unquote, won was a Chicago novelist who inserted his book in Chris Christie's hand
perfect.
On the beach?
Oh, nice.
Well, you know, Brad Thor.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think
that's
that,
the guy.
I don't think he – did he insert it or was he really reading it?
He was not really reading it.
Oh.
He had his guy insert that in there. They said, boy, everything is great in this picture for a day at the beach except a good summer book. Light bulb. They actually digitally inserted
that's
that.
Very funny because I've known – you probably met Brad before,
I have
right?
not,
no,
I,
so
yeah.
forever. And I saw him tweet that out, and I just assumed the Brad Thor books are the sorts of things that Republican lawmakers
oh
read.
God,
you know,
Steve, this is how
I really
fake
thought
news
fake
gets
fake news.
Made.
Fake
you know,
news. Shame absolutely. On Thor because he's a real –
Brad.
Right, he's – a conservative,
very conservative
right?
guy, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought he was really reading that book. Yeah, Brad's got a nice one there.
By the way, just for a moment, since we're on that topic, what's the takeaway from the Chris Christie story, Mark? What did you think, feel here? I mean, obviously he quit caring what people think a long time ago. He's been a mystery to me ever since he kind of started to sign on with the Trump bus and bandwagon, but I don't know. What do you think?
Several people made the comment that photo is as emblematic of this age as any. And I think that's absolutely correct.
Not just Christie, but the disconnect between politics and the people.
Sure.
Is that kind of where you are on that one?
Yeah. I mean, it has to go. If you had to rank the top 10 most tone-deaf moments in politics in the past 50 years, that has to be on the list because he was defiant even after he was caught.
I was going to say,
well, you want to be on the beach, then you get elected.
You become governor. Tone-deaf implies that they didn't, they regret it, you know, or that it was a mistake. I think they must. Well, I guess they didn't know they were going to be seen from the air. But I mean, it was a party. It wasn't, you know, Mary Pat and the governor. There were like 10 people out there.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't one of those sort of, I thought
it was a day at the beach.
Yeah, and I think the way they originally sold it, though, was not knowing there was photos, that he stopped by the beach, you know, like rolled up shirt sleeve. I'm here to maybe a photo op. Look at this empty beach. The people deserve to have the beach open, something like that. No, they had flip-flops on. You know, they came with baskets. They went to the beach.
Well, they were enjoying having the beach to themselves. Yeah. It was awful. It was so awful. And I think he was asked about it at a press conference, something about, oh, looks like you got some
sun. Did you get some sun today? Yeah.
And then he basically lied. And then once he knew there were pictures, then he
His spokesman cleaned it up, yeah.
Well, what they
his
did
spokesman
was they
said,
put
well, he went out to talk to his wife, but he had a hat on, so he didn't really get any sun.
Oh, right, that was their excuse.
Because the original story was, no, he didn't get any sun.
But there he is in his
lawn chair.
At the
beach. Well, he had a hat on.
Is there anyone else who has fallen so quickly as Chris Christie, I mean, in modern politics?
Maybe I had a metal detector looking for money for post-governorship.
Right.
For his next
there's
presidential
a very
run.
Interesting story from somebody in Reason magazine in the Tribune today. I don't know if you all saw this. And it's an op-ed piece. And the guy said that when the president says things that are not true, they may not be considered lies if the president doesn't think
that they're alive. Okay.
Right. So it's either his sort of, conspiracy theory or it's his misunderstanding of the facts. But either way, when he says things that aren't true, we are wrong to label them as lies.
Well, we've kind of talked about that, whether
we have.
Something is a lie or is not a lie. A lot of people are saying that it's a lie.
So if an insane person thinks something, it can't be a lie. It's just that it's in their mind.
Well,
I'm not saying person is.
In that instance, I think you make the point. I don't think the president's insane. I think he conveniently looks away from some facts that would refute.
Nobody said he was insane, John.
What are you saying, John? So if I say that Chris Christie was holding a Brad Thor book, if I don't know that it's not true, I'm not lying.
I'm going to skip back to Chicago for just a second. This is a visual, but we'll be making part of our video before the podcast itself. Gary McCarthy is running for mayor, and he has a beige button with blue. He has sort of
it's goldish, I think.
A brownish. Yeah. It's, if that's gold, then he needs to talk to his art team.
Newspaper photo.
It's a sad brown, and then he has GMFM typed across the button.
It sounds like a band you'd see at Pitchfork.
I thought that was like a nasty, abbreviation that you text to people. Oh, GMFM.
And I'm like, start using it.
Yeah, let's figure out what it really means.
Well, let's all tweet it out all day today.
GMFM. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? It's his initials, Gary McCarthy.
For mayor.
For mayor.
I thought Gary Meyer was back on radio.
Why?
GMFM.
Oh, Gary Meyer.
His thing? Yeah. He used that? FM. Sorry, Gary, if you're listening.
Yeah, it's kind of a putrid color. If it was in the Crayola box, that would be the color of the crayon putrid. Probably not a good button choice.
It's like he went to Zazzle.com and spent 2 minutes ordering buttons.
Well, he said in the Tribune that he's been approached by people who are really serious about it and that he's not likely to run, but he hates what's happening to the city, so implying he might run.
I think if he did, it would be knowing that he would not win, but just to be that little burr in Rahm Emanuel's
side. You mean like Donald Trump?
Sometimes.
How did Donald Trump get in this?
I don't think Donald Trump thought he was going to win. He thought he was going to be the burr in someone's side.
Yeah, he was going to force an agenda for somebody. You know, maybe that was Bernie Sanders' point, too. Well, at least I'll get the Democrats to put on the platform for Hillary this.
We tend to elect those people now, Kristen.
We do. You're right. I'm going to have to rewrite my whole.
Well, Rahm has, $30 million is a goal for his campaign war chest. I thought that was a fantastic number. An unnecessary amount of money. I don't know what the point of having $30 million in your reelection war chest is.
Keeps people out.
Say it again.
Keeps people out. It will keep people from even challenging you when you have that big. I just find it fascinating that he spent. I mean, to have that type of money, Rahm Emanuel spends a lot of time raising money, And yet he's always pointing the finger at Rauner or all the, you know, do your job. Why aren't you in Springfield? Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you fixing Chicago public schools? And he's saying this from Washington, D.C., where he's talking to the press club. And then he's flying to Canada. And then he's going on vacation. I mean, you know, just maybe you should pipe down a little bit if you're criticizing from afar.
Do you think that Rahm Emanuel is doing a good job? How about you, Mark?
I live in Oak Park.
Did you see the so he had that op-ed piece in the New York Times mm-hmm. about transit and about what Chicago's doing and maintaining it. Did you see the headline in the New York Daily News?
I know that they ripped on him about
it. They ripped on him and they said something like, well, at least we don't get shot when we go home on the train.
Yeah.
Rahm Emanuel's legacy right now is the violence. I mean, that's I don't understand. He won't leave office being a success if that does not in some way improve or change.
100 people shot over the 4th of July weekend in Chicago again, or actually it's more than that, the extended weekend. I just kind of shrug. It comes up on this podcast. I don't think we ever have anything definitive or helpful to say about it except to sit there and slap your head and wish that you had an answer. I don't know. Steve, is there anything else to add to that?
I don't like totals like that. I mean, obviously no one likes totals like that. I don't like total stories like that. You know, when you come in on Monday morning and TV and radio stations have nothing else to report, so they give the total shot over the weekend.
Really?
I don't know. I just there were more than 100 but it was also a 5-day period.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how it breaks down per day,
that
compares.
Maybe that number isn't as
horrific as – well, I mean, of course it's horrific, but –
They're also saying
that
it's possible
like
that the system they have to identify whether there's a shot or not is incorrect because of the fireworks. I'm not joking. That's not a joke.
Yeah.
There are things called spotters, and that might have impacted. I mean, obviously, whatever it was too high, but it might have been not as high as those indicated.
Well, the president said last week that he's actually, that's it. We're going to do something about the violence in Chicago.
He said he was going to get it done in a week.
Yeah, well, I'm not talking about that, Mark, but he most recently said that he tweeted that I'm sending...
We're getting 20 ATF agents.
That's what I thought it was, yeah.
Which feels a little bit like a drop in the bucket. But I don't know how much more law enforcement you can instill. I mean, you can't have a police officer on every corner. And so I do think Rahm does some things well. He was handed, a city that is drowning in debts, Chicago Public Schools, a lot of borrowing before he even got here. But he has neglected to make crime from 2011 when he was first elected his number one priority. He should be in those communities every day. He should be meeting with those aldermen every day. He should be talking to every CEO to see if they will expand or do something like Whole Foods did in Englewood. That should be happening all over the city. I just drove down Halsted today to get to work to avoid Taste of Chicago from the South Side. Row after row after row of empty storefronts, and the only place that was really hopping was a liquor store at 9 in the morning. I just think we could be doing better, and it's pretty late in the game for him to be maybe trying to feel like he has a handle on it. He's been in office now almost two full terms, and he's going to run for a third, and the crime has been consistent and appalling, in some of these communities.
And that's on him.
It's on him.
It's funny because I'll bet he knows that. I'll bet he would agree with that. Maybe he wouldn't. But, I mean, there it is. And I think that just shows how impossible the situation is. I mean, you're right. He's not a rookie now. This is going to be his legacy, too. And, boy, I haven't heard him. I haven't heard the police chief or superintendent. I haven't heard anybody with a solution.
Well, sending in the police
GMFM.
Yeah. As Kristen said, is not the answer. Sending in federal troops is not the answer.
And
this thing goes way back. It obviously has to do with lack of jobs. I mean, everybody
ultimately it's
and it's
lack
not
of jobs.
You said it's impossible. It's not impossible. I mean, other cities have been at this position and have fixed it. I mean, New York in many ways fixed it. There are other cities that have as well. Now the mayor would say, put people away. And they did. The legislature did pass tougher gun sentencing legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Which
for repeat offenders, which is
important. Which is what they've wanted.
The minimum sentence goes from like 3 to 7 years, I think, something like that.
Yeah, if you get caught
a second time,
you get put away. And you heard that even from prosecutors, that criminals kind of knew that they would not get the book thrown at them in this city, whereas in other cities they do. But I will say Rahm has one good idea, and we should do more of this. He has some program that he rolled out last week where he tries to encourage public safety professionals to buy their primary residence in these targeted neighborhoods.
Right.
I mean, that's a great idea. How about we did that in 2011? How about we did something 10 years ago before all the exodus of middle-class black families started leaving places like Chatham they're worried about their kids?
Are one of the questions, though, about that program that they're doing it by police district, so there are some really nice places in certain districts and really bad ones,
mm-hmm.
and so they're worried that the cops or whomever might live in the Tony parts of the district.
Right, or how do you test the primary residence? You know, a lot of them will buy a home and then rent it out. That's not the point. The point is for them to actually live there. So I didn't know what sort of oversight there would be there. But also these communities have to...
But it's a try.
It's a try. And I think we have a story in today's Tribune over 4th of July how they have these hot spots where the residents are staying up all night and trying to do some of their own patrolling and more block parties and more. That has to be part of the equation, too.
Yeah, no kidding. We've delayed as long as we possibly can. Trump talk. The weird story this week is that the president is now still very involved in this, the aftermath of the CNN video that he retweeted. It's the video from a WWE event that he made an appearance at years ago where he body slammed Vince McMahon, and a Reddit contributor put the CNN logo on Vince McMahon's face. So now it looks like the president is beating up CNN. He retweeted that. I don't know if he thought it was funny. I'm not sure what Donald Trump thinks is funny, but not only did he put it on real Donald Trump, but he put it on the POTUS account. The official account of the presidency of the United States retweeted that. And since then, we've all lost our mind. In my brackets of weird Trump moments, this is my new number one seed. And I've been saying that a lot lately. I don't know. What's the gang think about the fallout of this?
I'm kind of sick of the losing our mind aspect of it all. Like, yeah, it's stupid. It's ridiculous. I mean, what do you expect? But the losing the mind thing, A, it takes us off the ball of substantial things that might be happening with healthcare or other issues, whichever side you are on, it takes us off the ball of discussing it. Instead, we're discussing a dumb tweet sent by originally created by a virulent anti-Semite and then retweeted by the president, who probably didn't know that, probably thought it was funny because he's got the sense of humor of a 6-year-old. I mean,
12. 12-year-old boy.
Okay. 12-year-old boy. Let's go with that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we can talk about it, and I'm your guest here, but what's the point in some ways? You know what I mean? Like, we just keep doing it.
I understand what you're saying, and I agree a little bit, but I also think that if we stop, it becomes a little normalized.
That's what I thought you were going to go with, is that we've got to maintain our outrage.
I guess I go back and forth. You're right. I don't know. Does it really encourage violence against the media?
Yeah, I don't even think you have to get that far. Because I'm not sure about that you know, people have their hair on fire about that. You can stop with the fact that the president of the United States retweeted that. You know, you can stop with the fact that he once was on the WWF and fake slammed Vince McMahon to the ground.
Yeah, that's real video.
Yeah, but the fact that the official White House Twitter account sent that out is just so ridiculous on its face.
It's so sophomoric.
We don't even have to ask the next question, you know, is he implying violence? My God, what are they thinking? You know, the world looks at this stuff.
What they're thinking is that there's a bunch of people that aren't sitting here at this table who think it's funny, who think it's cool.
Right, well, I think that's the point. That's why it has to keep being pointed out for how stupid it is, so that group of people doesn't grow and maybe shrinks. Because if we don't, it's going to become more and more accepted. If people don't stop to think, you know, you can't just think, well, this is another Trumpism. Think of each of them individually. Look at this. This is what the president of the United States did today. And they don't stand up. And I think they should be pointed out.
Every single time. But then, yeah, what does it imply and what do we do about it? And I don't think we can fix that one either, right?
I mean, if you're a mainstream, every mainstream Republican basically came out and condemned it, as well as they did with the Morning Joe stuff, right?
Yeah.
But then, if you're a Democrat, you say, well, great, you're still going to, campaign for the guy. You're still going to vote for the guy. You're still going to go along with all his policies. Does that do? It doesn't mean anything.
That's only more and more likely if people don't keep pointing it out. One day the sun will come out. No, one day there will be a point when they stop doing that. If you don't keep pointing out how outrageous some of this behavior is, that day is further away.
Well, Kristen, are you surprised that Republicans of some stature are continuing to stand by Trump, generally speaking? I mean, none of them have, you know, not that Reince Priebus is going to say this, but I mean, so many of them are still aiding and abetting the president. They aren't shutting him down. They aren't roundly criticizing him either for his policies or his sophomore tweets. They're still doing the Republican president's business.
I mean, I'd like to think that they are outraged by the tweets because it derails his policy agenda. And many of them do actually believe fervently in repealing and replacing Obamacare or doing tax reform, getting rid of corporate tax loopholes, whatever. And every time he tweets, it derails the actual policy outcomes that they would like to see, finally having a Republican in the executive office. I do think we are becoming somewhat numb to the tweets. I always go back to that moment during the primary when penis size became an issue because somebody talked about hands, and I thought, that's it. So I have not been shocked by anything since that moment, except maybe the Access Hollywood video. I just put a bunch of Tic Tacs in my mouth. I mean, if that doesn't make you realize that this guy is going to continue this type of behavior, nothing will.
That was more of my point. I worded it incorrectly. The outrage is you can comment on it, but the outrage seems fake to me. Like, we know it. Where, how can you be outraged by it anymore? It's just ridiculous.
And it is who he is. He's not going to get rid of that Twitter account.
Well, I don't know. Walking into this studio last week, I said I'm surprised at how surprised I am. And what was the one I was? I don't know. But the thing about is it Mika or Micah?
Mika
Brzezinski. I thought, oh my God, that is so irrelevant, so sophomoric, so mean, so misogynistic. And that's our president. And it surprised me. I can't answer that, Mark. How shocked and surprised I was at how mean spirited and unnecessary and petty it was by the president. And then, you know, then he doubled down the next.
Yeah, and then a few days later he said, well, you know, I like him as people. You know,
like yeah, days. But they're idiots and losers.
Two things about that, though. Mika Brzezinski responded by tweeting a box of Cheerios, and the ad campaign said, made for little hands.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I don't like that either.
I don't either.
And CNN responded to the video by saying, essentially, if I recall correctly, the last couple lines were, we'll keep doing our job. It's time for you to start doing yours. I think that was an inappropriate response too.
Well, that's better than a small hand.
Yeah, I don't think it's a news outlet's position to say you should start doing your job. You know, a lot of people think he has been doing his job. I think short of that,
no, I agree
we keep
you.
Doing your job, that's good, but you should start doing yours was too much.
The president forgets is that the media are people. They're actual human beings. And so if we don't do our job fairly or correctly or as well as we should, he shouldn't be shocked that they're not up to their game, maybe, when he's the one that's personally criticizing them. I mean, if they were ever going to err, it would be now because of the way he's been treating them.
Well, and when they did, CNN essentially got rid of three, right? When there were the story.
Yeah, well, he said there. That goes to show how bad journalism is. And I think getting rid of three. But look at what happened when they didn't have sufficient attribution for a story. They ran with it. Look what happened then. They admitted it. They apologized to the person who was the object of the story, who said it's okay. Then they fired those three guys or accepted their resignations. That, to me, sounds like the action of responsible journalism.
That's real news. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was the action of true journalism that sometimes gets it wrong. Let's talk about our favorite our recommendations of the week. Oh, I just want to ask you guys real quick. Should Illinois participate, cooperate with the federal government's the president's voter.
I think the where they're looking for the 3 million illegal votes that would have put Donald Trump over the top.
Election Integrity Commission,
right? I think that they should do it where they can legally, where it doesn't cost an unreasonable amount of money. I mean, it's a request from the federal government to investigate something, so they have that. If it's clear it's a witch hunt and it's going to cost more or require them to change policy, I think they should stand up and say no.
Yeah. David Orr said we shouldn't cooperate in any way. What are your thoughts about that?
No, we should not cooperate.
How about you?
I I have a hard time because a lot of it is public. You could walk into any office and get it yourself. But no, I don't think we should cooperate because we got bigger problems here. We don't have time to. Every county handles their election process differently. Every single county. So 102 counties in Illinois now, we got to drop what we're doing and deal with all this other stuff to send information on for something that there's just not enough proof exists.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Does he know who he's asking for help right now? We got our hands full here in Illinois.
Well, his own vice chair, right, is from Kansas or something, and Kansas isn't participating. Are they not giving all the information because it's not legal for them to do it?
Okay, recommendations from the gang for the week. These are things that we are reading, watching, listening to, or consuming. Steve Bertrand goes first.
I've been watching Lovesick. I've been kind of struggling, but Lovesick is this Netflix show. Remember I recommended Genius a few weeks ago, the Einstein show on National Geographic. Well, the guy who played the young Einstein is in this British show called Lovesick, and he finds out that he has chlamydia. We've all been there. And he has to go back and tell his former partners that he's sick, okay, and that they might be too, which is kind of blah, blah. But it really is a vehicle just for all of these different vignettes. The first season wrapped up for me last night, and it did so pretty nicely. So Lovesick is kind of over the top and obvious, but I liked it.
What are you liking, Mark?
I read a book by a guy named Ari Berman called Give Us the Ballot, and it's about voting rights throughout the history of the United States, and we just kind of were touching on that subject. And to me, it's the most nonpartisan issue that there is, that everybody should have access to the ballot, and it goes through decades and decades of efforts to erase that.
Does he conclude that we're making it too difficult for some people to vote in this country?
He does. For example, voter ID is a big thing. States are trying to get people to have voter ID, but voter ID amounts to a voter tax because it costs money to get that ID.
That's really? Is that
if you want to get a state ID, it costs money, and that's a voter tax. And voter tax is being declared illegal. That's just one example in a 500-page book.
Wow. Is this somebody that's going to be on your show?
No.
You're just reading that for fun?
I watched the Justin Timberlake concert on Netflix for fun, which was great. But this I read to learn more about the issue.
How about you, Kristen?
Gosh, I have nothing. I have two kids playing sports. I haven't watched TV probably in 2 months. I haven't been to a movie. I'm reading a book with my kids, the movie Lion was based on, The Long Journey Home about the little boy. I'm super late even in that. That was an Oscar-nominated movie. So I'm just going to recommend my summer drink.
We're all about that. Hold on. We want to write this down.
Last year I was teased because it was Fresca and tequila and a little lime because it's very low calorie.
Sounds great, actually.
And it's delicious, but Steve thought it sounded disgusting because who drinks Fresca? Well, I do. Now I'm just doing a straight-up beer with a shot of tequila and a little Bloody Mary mix. Zing zang. Zing zang. You got to try it.
That's the name of the drink or that's just
your... That's the name of the Bloody Mary mix. It's the absolute best.
How many can
best.
You have?
I don't know, like 12.
Everybody is drinking Rattlers this summer.
What is that?
Well, go to Whole Foods and when you check out, or Target for that matter, they have these long, tall, 4-pack cans and it's a fruit-centric alcoholic drink. And it's not real alcoholic, but it's not too fruity. It's just sort of a nice blend. You can get it in grapefruit.
Sounds like the new wine cooler.
It's kind of it looks and works a little bit like that.
If you recommend a Seagram 7, I'm out of here. James and Bartles, my whole high school experience.
Well, my recommendation is going to be the anti-recommendation, too, because we've been moving. You don't move. Moving is a process. You didn't, like, move on the 14th. You move that month and a half, or at least we do. We still haven't had cable hooked up to our house, so we're rolling Wi-Fi free, internet free, cable free. We have no electronic access at my home.
Wow. I mean, for a media guy,
sorry.
That's got to be rough.
Well, you know,
you got your phone, right?
We have our phones, and that's our only, you know, device that connects us to the world. But we've been playing Bananagrams and Solitaire with laminated cards, you know, not on
yes.
You can still do
so
that.
What is
sorry.
Bananagram?
You've never played Bananagrams?
No.
Bananagrams is the best game.
Is that
I
little bag?
Love
it comes in that little bag?
It comes in a little bag, the shape of a banana. You unzip the banana. And if you're just joining us, I'm describing a game. And inside are a bunch of little tiles with letters on them. It looks like Scrabble. And then you each take, you empty them all out in a pile, and you each take about 21 of them. And then you start to put words together, and you build your own crossword puzzle thing. You can move them around. When you get all of your 21 used, you take another one. You say peel. And if I'm behind, I now have to take another one too. Oh, crap, now I got another one, another one, another one. And when all of them are used, the last person, the first person out wins. That's not a great description of it, but it's very fun. It's very frustrating. It's so you're leading, then somebody else is leading. Bananagrams. If you like crosswords or
Scrabble
or Boggle, if you like word games, Bananagrams
is the
best.
I think I'll watch TV tonight.
You can throw this is my recommendation, Bananagrams. Bananagrams.
We'll watch the interview show.
There you go.
Yeah, when's the last plug for you, Mark? When is the next show coming up?
I don't know. September 8th, we have a live show. I'm taking the summer off. I got youth baseball to concentrate on during the summer.
You can still watch it in reruns on Channel 11 and then get ready for the fall schedule when you announce that with us at a later date.
There you go.
That's this week's edition of the Mincing Rascals. Thank you, Ben Cortez, our engineer. Thank you, Mark Baser, Christian McQuarrie. Steve Bertrand has exited stage left. And the Mincing Rascals are produced by Elif Garris. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on the John Williams Show on WGN Radio. Radio.